5.6 seconds to go. They get it into Powell. Powell down the right sideline. A desperation three is good, but it won't matter. How sweet it is. The Jayhawks march on to Omaha. Rock, chalk it up. Sweet 16, number 31.
It feels great. It's you know, you look at this team, and everybody, including myself, has said what's wrong with this team all year long. We don't do this, we don't do that, or we're too small, we don't have enough depth, or we don't play hard enough, or we're not thirsty or hungry enough. And all they've done is the number three overall seed and won two games in the tournament going to Sweet 16. So, you know, we got to win two more games to get to where we want to go. But so proud of our kids, and certainly nobody can say that they haven't had a great season. Now we got to go make great special.
It's Thursday, and that means it's time to talk to a professional who would never forget a name.
So I wish your son Miller all the best.
My name is Noah!
Why? Because his voice is so velvety smooth.
Yo, Manella, kick it one time, boy.
It makes the girls go,
oh my.
He's a rapper so fly.
So if you want sports talk that's more than just a score, you gotta listen to Wade on KD Country 94. We got the tunes that'll make you shake and bake. Z96.3, The Lake.
He makes Eminem wanna cry. To the Jayhawks, Brian Hee.
Sportos, motorheads, geeks, they all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
Right now, on The Sports Ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie at 118 North Millen Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.
Yes, he is the voice of the Jayhawks, getting ready for the Sweet 16 up in Omaha. They're en route to Omaha as we speak. Brian, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great, Wade. Thanks for having me on. We're riding north up on I-29 right now. I got the legendary Jayhawk engineer Bob Newton driving the van. Got Nick Schwert, David Lawrence, our pre- and post-game team in the back seat, and the lovely Linda Lawrence here with us as well, just to make the overall appearance of the group go up quite a bit. So, yeah, we're having fun, man, on our way to hopefully a full weekend and a very victorious one, if things break right for us.
All right, so let's get right into it. Malik Newman, boy, has he come up big here recently, and Kansas needed it on an off night for Navante Graham, who realized, I don't have my shot, I'm going to distribute in the second half. And Newman took full advantage.
He did. I think the emergence of Malik makes this team so much more dynamic offensively. And it's not like he just started scoring. We saw glimpses of this over the course of the regular year. The home game versus Baylor when he scored 12 straight. The 27-point game he had versus Iowa State. But with the exception of the Penn game, you know, this has been next-level type scoring for Malik that's now asserted him as a second alpha dog in his Kansas offense. Kind of like he had a year ago with Frank and Josh, and then Devontae as kind of a third wingman. You've got two guys now to where if Devontae isn't hitting, which the pace has kind of been once out of every six games or so, he has a 30% shooting night, then you've got somebody else that can put the weight of the team on his shoulders. And obviously, Steve's been that at times too, but I'm not sure anybody can fill it up as fast or as continuous next to Devontae like Malik can. And so that has been a terrific development, and you can't undersell LeGerald Vick's ascension either. I think his postseason, while not the same volume or numbers that Malik has posted, the efficiency and consistency of Vick has been a big story. And keep in mind, it was at this time, maybe 5 weeks ago, that Bill Self was still pushing buttons, trying to get both those guys motivated. And when I asked Coach Self in late February, is this your best coaching job? Could you be Coach of the Year? He said, no, it's not. I'm still trying to get two of my five starters to play on a consistent basis. How could I be Coach of the Year? And yet, now those two guys he was talking about and promoting the focus and the consistency of back then have played about as well as anybody in the postseason. So he's the ultimate button pusher. He's the ultimate guy pulling the right strings at the right time. Get his guys going. And if you can get Devontae back on track shooting the ball, now that Udoka is pretty close to being 100%, or at least he's in the 90 percentile, I think this team has a chance to be playing at its absolute optimal potential level at the most important time of the year. And how often can you say that? Usually teams peak early, or they're not close to what they could be late in the year. Kansas club. Now that Malik and LeGerald are dialed in, they're pretty close to playing at that optimal level if you can get your first-team All-American shooting again. Because obviously, outside of that second half, West Virginia, and certain stretches in the Penn game, this wasn't a one-game deal for Devontae. He was struggling for the first five halves of the Big 12 tournament. So would really like to see those first couple of shots go down for him tomorrow night and see this Kansas club click on all cylinders like we think they're capable of, but haven't seen completely over more than one or two games this season where, you know, all four guards and Udoka are going at the same time.
Kansas was able to win the Big 12 tournament without Udoka Azubuike, but in the NCAA tournament, you knew that would be different. And luckily, he was available against Seton Hall. And to me, it was about as obvious as you could ever see in a basketball game, is when Lightfoot or DeSosa was on the floor against Delgado, those two had no chance. It was a man versus boys. Udoka comes in, all of a sudden Delgado gets a little bit quieter. He still got a couple buckets against Udoka. He flopped once or twice, got some offensive fouls. But Kansas, Delgado would have gone off for 35 and 30 if Lightfoot and DeSosa had to be in the entire game. Udoka's presence so important in that game. I know he wasn't 100%, and now it's going to be really important the rest of the way.
Yeah, you nailed it. 20 of the 24 points scored by Delgado were scored when Udoka was on the bench. When Udoka was on the floor, I can't tell you the number of times they entered into the post and Delgado took one dribble and then kicked it right back out. Yep. Because suddenly there's a man standing between him and the basket. There's 7 feet, 280 pounds. And I love Mitch as much as the next guy. I think Mitch is a great athlete that's good both on his first and second jump. And he's a good help side defense guy that can slide over and get a block with the ball at the apex of his flight. But in terms of being sturdy and strong and holding his ground, like you've got a grown man backing him down, I don't want to say that Delgado was tossing him around like a rag doll, but, I mean, it was evident that Delgado was going to get anything he wanted versus Mitch. He had a 40-pound differential in just size. And so not Mitch's game. And let's give Mitch the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he's a four. He's not a five. Yeah. He had to play the five because that's the type of offense we run, and that's the personnel situation we've been stuck in this year. But it's not his bread and butter at 210 pounds to be backing down with a, you know, 250-pound Dominican Republic superstar. So that wasn't his best game. But for Udoka, what a difference he made. And while it was Malik that had the headline with 28 points, I think you're astute in pointing out that no player impacted the game more when he was on the floor and changing the game on both ends than Udoka Azubuike did. And he's going to be big against this Clemson team that – everybody talks about their seventh of the nation in two-point field goal percentage defense, but they don't have this type of size and strength and you know, muscular presence in the post that Udoka Azubuike is. They've got a lot of 6'9", 230-pound, 6'9", 220-pound type guys that are wiry, the best of which is Elijah Thomas, a transfer from Texas A&M. They may be good defending around the rim, but they haven't faced a ton of guys like Doak. And I think Doak being back makes Devontae's job easier. You got that 7-foot presence to lob it into with soft hands. And I think we're going to really see Kansas test just how good this Clemson interior defense is early and often with Udoka back in the starting lineup.
Voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney, brought to you each week at this time by Anderson Insurance Agency. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them 738-5701. All right, so you touched upon Clemson a little bit. The game tomorrow night, 6:07 tip time. Clemson looked terrific against Auburn. That game, it was over really at the very beginning. So you mentioned defensively what they are good at, and of course they don't have as much size to go against Udoka as you mentioned. But what about offensively? What problems does Clemson pose for Kansas?
Well, I think, like Seton Hall, they're an older team. They don't have as many seniors. Seton Hall started four seniors. This team will start three juniors, a senior, and a freshman. But they're an older team. Five of their top eight scorers are transfers, so they're a little bit longer in the tooth. They've got three really good guards. And it's a club that, in addition to having the defense that I mentioned inside the perimeter, they're top 25 nationally in block rate. They do a good job scoring there. And you know, when DeVoe's hitting, this club is a much different team. Nick Schwert from our pre and post is just telling me that the way he shoots the ball in their wins from three is 25% higher than he shoots it in their losses. And so if you're trying to pinpoint one guy that spells the difference between winning and losing. It's the efficiency of the outside shot of the bow, and then turnovers. If you look at their numbers in which they've turned it over 14 times or more, it's night and day difference between winning and losing. And so Kansas, you know, hopefully can throw some defense at them as well. But I think the Jayhawks, it's time to get it going with Devontae Graham, get some of that swagger back to your first team All-American, play inside out with no cut, closer to full strength, and be more of what you were for the bulk of this season with those two guys, now with Malik and LeGerald added in. If that's the case, I think Kansas can win convincingly. I think Kansas can get a little bit of momentum themselves after a first weekend where they kind of had to grind it out, and hopefully head into Sunday with a full head of steam. I told you last week on these reports, I thought that, you know, the path to the Elite Eight I was okay with, and that maybe the tougher of the first three games might be the second game, not the third. I'm not sitting up here chalking it up or anything like that, but I'm telling you, I like Kansas in this matchup. I love the fact that there have been national writers that speak of, you know, exalted Clemson to a higher level than Kansas even, based on how impressive they were up 41 on three occasions versus Auburn. And I think all that plays into the hands of the way Bill Self likes to motivate this team. And, you know, the fact that they go into this regional final not thought of as the favorite, Duke is.
Yeah.
And it may be a one seed next to Kansas's name, and it may be way more crimson and blue in the stands, but who in America amongst the national media is picking Kansas to come out of Omaha this week? I searched all the websites last night. I couldn't find one. So if you found one, let me know. Everybody's taking Duke. And there's some that think Clemson will beat Kansas and have an all-ACC regional final. So I love that from a motivational standpoint for the Kansas team. And we'll take our chances come Sunday should the Jayhawks get there. But all along, ever since you and I were talking in November and I came back to Chicago after seeing Duke up close in the Champions Classic, and I told you I think they're the most talented team in the country. They're number one with a bullet. All along, we felt like there'd be a collision course with them at some point. I, for one, was just hoping it would be in the sixth game of a tournament run, not the potential fourth game. But you're going to have to beat the best to be the best, as they say. I know that's cliche, but it's so true. And hopefully we get that lead.
Well,
because I think that would be one of the most unbelievable regional finals we've seen. And we're already finding out that the basic tickets for less than the highest-priced regional ticket, both Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, the most coveted ticket in NCAA tournament history at a regional site. And hopefully the basketball action hits up to that hype amongst the respective fan bases, because folks are going through the tobacco puffs to get to the building these next two nights.
Well, you see it all the time. It seems the NCAA tournament, a team will look awesome and they'll play terrific, but they rarely follow it up with another terrific performance. That's why I'm worried about Texas A&M in the Sweet 16. I'm worried about Clemson the next round. We saw KU look great against Purdue last year and then struggle against Oregon. I've got this feeling KU is going to play their best game of the year. I think they're going to beat Clemson. Then the question is, can they follow that up possibly against Duke, which I think you make a good point. If Kansas plays Duke, I think KU is going to play a little bit looser, knowing they're not the favorite, even though they're the one seed.
It's a great point. And last year, they were probably playing tight, knowing that they were the favorite of the Elite Eight.
Yep.
And that everybody thought this paved path through Kansas City absolutely equated to a Final Four run to Glendale. And if you get to Sunday this time around, even though you'll still have a home court advantage over the Duke fans, because of what you just mentioned and the fact that most quote-unquote experts are expecting Duke to win this game, maybe you can be a little more loose and let it fly. And I said all along, with this team this season, everything they've been through, from the personnel challenges they've had after losing Billy Preston, the cloud that kind of hung over the team for the better part of 3 months when he's practicing with you every day and yet you don't know if you're going to be able to put him in. We were on the road in league play in Austin and Fort Worth, and he's going through shoot-around thinking he might get a call that afternoon to start a game and never did. Then you reclassify Silvio at semester. You're pulling a tight end off the football team just to have bodies. Everything this club has been through to get to this point, if you get to Sunday, man, you're playing with house money.
Yep.
And I realize Kansas fans, when you're a one seed, they expect the Jayhawks to go to the Final Four. And Bill Self will be the first to tell you that two Final Fours in his first 14 seasons isn't as many as he's felt like his club should have gotten. But everything they've been through this season in the ultra-competitive Big 12 Conference where they were tested every night, and yet still won this league by a couple of games. I think if you get to the Sunday regional final, if you get back to a third consecutive Elite Eight with this group, it wasn't, you know,
2 weeks into Big 12 conference play expected to be here. It wasn't a month ago expected to be a one seed. I think if Bill Self somehow finds a way to get to Sunday, what a success it's been. And then if you can get beyond that and make it to the Final Four, regardless of what happens in San Antonio, this will be one of the most successful seasons in the modern era of KU basketball, because there have been much better teams, much deeper, go as far or shorter, quite frankly, than this club. And the way he's been able to patchwork and piecemeal it together is really, really astounding. I've referenced this before with you, but I'll say it again. We're always comparing the teams that could go to San Antonio and did go to San Antonio. That title team in 2008, the fourth big on their depth chart, now has his number hanging in Allen Fieldhouse, wrapped in full August. That was their fourth big. This year, at times, your fourth big was Clay Young, who's not a big. At other times, it was James Sosinski. That's who it is now, who's a football player. So the fact that they've put themselves in position to possibly return to the Final Four, or at least even just get to Sunday, speaks volumes about the quality of coaching job that you've done for Bill Self. And that's why I say, take care of business tomorrow night, and then come out on Sunday and let it fly, because regardless of what happens, just to be on that stage at this point, knocking on the door of a Final Four after everything this club has been through, has been a Herculean effort, spectacular coaching job, great senior leadership, and arrive at, while bumpy at times, and there was some doubt along the way, has been one heck of a fun ride to get the cover on call.
I think it'd be a heck of a year if they made the Elite Eight. I still think it's a great year making a Sweet 16. I do think it'd be interesting. You know, if KU plays Duke and they lose to Duke, that's one thing. If KU ends up playing Syracuse and loses to Syracuse, I think the narrative is completely different from a lot of the media, even though that's probably unfair, because that would mean Syracuse beat Michigan State and Duke and then Kansas. But you know how it is. You would be going up against an 11 seed in a regional final. KU did that against VCU. It didn't work out for them. I'd rather see Duke. It sounds really stupid, but KU, I think, would be better off playing Duke, playing loose, being the underdog, than being a favorite going against Syracuse 2-3 zone trying to break 60 points.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you make. And obviously, I'd rather play the team that we've beaten by 16 already, but they've evolved since then. And they've lost key players since then, too. But I think they're playing much better now. And it is just junked up enough and just, you know, different enough that it can throw a wrench in the system. But Duke's playing a lot of zone now, too.
Yeah.
So, and that really is the tip of the cap to Coach K for adjusting mid-season, taking a subpar defensive team and now making them above average and in some regards really good when you've got that type of length. I mean, they've got 6'10", 260, and 6'11", 245 on that back line. That's pretty salty. And they're playing defense now much better than they were at the start of the year. So, to me, I still think they're the most talented team in the country, and that's not going too far out on a limb. I think everybody's saying that. We were watching the selection show at David Lawrence's house, and I can't tell you what I said when Duke came up on the draft. It's probably not fit for a family program like yours. But that was the 1-2 seed I didn't want.
I know.
Because in my mind all along, you know, that was a 1-2 caliber team. And really, heading into the Big 12 tournament, after they had beat Carolina in their regular season finale and beat lost at Oklahoma State, despite what Joe Lenardi was saying on bracketology, in my mind, they were a 1 and we were a 2, and I was just hoping that we wouldn't be in the same region. So this has kind of been that matchup we dreaded all along. But like I said, you know, to beat the best, you got to beat it. And it's just coming sooner than we would have liked. But, man, if they could somehow line up and beat Duke on Sunday, you know, what a huge accomplishment that would be and what tremendous momentum you would have heading into San Antonio. Suddenly, you wouldn't have folks like Myron Metcalf put Kansas at the bottom of the list of title contenders. You wouldn't have folks saying this is the second or third best team in its region right now. You know, you'd have folks standing up and saying that's the team to beat at the Alamo Dome if you could make that happen. But, hey, we got to get by Friday first. And while we both feel like, you know, this is a matchup Kansas is going to go out there and perform well within, as we saw from last week's results, anything can happen. And, hey, we got to dig up the tapes, because I said this like 3 times on your show, and it's very seldom that I'm ever right on a prediction, but we talked about how much topsy-turvy action we expected in the first weekend. Remember what I said? I thought 8 teams that were amongst the top 16 teams in the field of 68, 1 through 4 in each region, would be out. It was 9, and it should have been 10 if Michigan doesn't hit a game winner at the buzzer. And so it's just unreal. To quote Bill Self on Monday when we taped the TV show, he said this is the most whacked-out bracket he's ever seen. I'd never heard him use the term whacked out before, so I thought that was pretty cool. But he's right. I mean, from UMBC all the way down to having the left side of your bracket just completely decimated. 1 through 4 in one region completely gone. 1 and 2 in another region already gone. It's nuts. So don't take anything for granted these next 2 days. Maybe the Big 12 keeps marching on. Maybe we'll get some surprises along the way. I'd love to see a West Virginia Texas Tech regional final in Boston. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
But pulling for our conference, pulling for the Hawks, and really proud of what we've seen at this point.
Well, if KU beats Clemson and they beat Duke, KU will probably then become the favorite to win the national championship when they make it to San Antonio, more than likely. Time for the off-the-wall question before we let you go. Did you hear the story about LeBron James gaining 7 pounds while playing in an Eastern Conference Finals game?
I did hear that. That seems crazy to me.
I'll say what I think.
And impossible.
It's impossible. I'm just going to say it. It's impossible. So the off-the-wall question for you is, have you ever gained 7 pounds? It's a three-prong question. Have you ever gained 7 pounds in a week or in a day or in a few hours playing in a basketball game?
I've probably gained 7 pounds in a week. Probably not in a day or in a basketball game like LeBron. I've probably gained it. This time of year, we work long hours, we eat at bad hours,
yes.
Like 11 o'clock at night. Usually the only thing open at 11 o'clock at night is stuff you don't want to be eating that late.
Right.
So I probably put on 7 pounds in a week, but I've never done it in a two-hour window, and I don't know how that's humanly possible.
No.
Something was up with those scales that day for the cast, but it's a great story. And if there's any superhuman freak that would have a different body to most, it's him. But I still can't wrap my mind around how that's possible.
See, I think I could gain 7 pounds a week without a problem if I'm like at all kinds of tournaments. The hospitality rooms are to die for. I mean, you get free food, there's cookies, there's cake, there's all that stuff. You got access to that, don't you?
If I went to that Mexican restaurant you took me to when I came to visit last June and had their queso and chips every day, I'm pretty sure I could put on 7 pounds in a week. But that might be what it would take.
I hear you, man. Hey, well, I hope next week you and I are previewing the Final Four and that you're making your travel plans to go to San Antonio and to hang out on the Riverwalk and have KU in the Final Four. It'd be quite a story if the Jayhawks make the Final Four with all the adversity they had to deal with, as you documented very well just a little bit ago. Safe travels to Omaha. We'll talk to you again next week, Brian.
Can't wait, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Take care. That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you, as always, by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie at 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.